time, for instance, in the 1800s, when the Haskalah came to Russia, it became a sign of the fact that one was giving up his Judaism if he spoke Russian in the house. Jews only, Eastern European Jews spoke only Yiddish. That was their language. And Yiddish, as you know, is not only an expressive language, it's more than a language, much more than a language. Yiddish presupposed knowledge of the Bible and of the Medrash and of some of the Talmud. It presupposed a moral world. It had tremendous humor and pathos built into it. And it reflected a Jewish outlook on the world and on its neighbors and on life generally. And therefore, just by knowledge of the language, of its idioms and its cliches and its examples, so one was a Jewish scholar already. That's part of the tragedy of the demise of Yiddish in our time, is that that has disappeared. And with its disappearance, a great deal of the fiber of Judaism has been lost, even to those who still remain loyal to Torah and mitzvahs. But there's a certain feeling, a certain aura, a certain understanding that cannot be expressed. I remember yet I was when I went to the yeshiva, so all of my rabbeim, without exception, were Yiddish speaking. And we were all American guys who didn't speak Yiddish, but we learned Yiddish and we understood enough Yiddish. And it comes today for me to teach, for instance, a piece of Gemara that I learned when I was in the yeshiva. So I cannot get it across in English the way they got it. You know, I still hear the Yiddish. The Yiddish says it. It's as though the Gemara were written to be trained, even though the Gemara is Aramaic. But the Gemara is written to be done in Yiddish, because in Yiddish, that's the word. That expresses it. And in English, even if I get the exact translation, it just doesn't go that same way. Yiddish was the repository of the Jewish soul. And in Eastern Europe, it was the language of the Jews. The Jews also in Eastern Europe, from the outset, kept their own dress. A distinctive Jewish dress. And the Jews in Eastern Europe, almost without exception, had beards, had payas, had they looked Jewish. They didn't want to look like the rest of the population. And what had begun in Western Europe as a badge of shame and as a means of insult in Eastern Europe became the badge of pride. That's how Jews dressed, that's how they looked, that's how they behaved, that's what they were. And you have some of that in Israel today. See, we're not accustomed to it, but if you'll take a look in the pictures of which exist of Jews in Eastern Europe of a century ago, so you'll see that it's hard to tell the difference between the Hasidic Rebbe and his driver, or the one that's, or the Balagola, the one that's driving the horse, because the guy that drove the horse and wagon also looked like that. I remember I was in Israel once, and a cab company in Yerushalayim called Eisenbach, and it's a religious cab company. Yeah, and so somebody called up for a cab, and Eisenbach sent the cab, and there was an American family got in the cab, and a little girl got in the cab, and the little girl said, "Gee," she said, "look," she says, "Rabbi is driving the cab." Because by us, we're not accustomed to see Jews who look like Jews in everyday walks of life, in everyday professions, etc. In Eastern Europe, that was the mode of operation. That was the way they looked, the way they dressed, the way they behaved, what they looked for. And they retreated.